The history of therapeutic grounding on this edition of Truth and Love. I'm Dale Johnson, and you're listening to Truth and Love, a podcast of the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to provide biblical solutions to the problems that people face. This week on the podcast, I'm thrilled to have with me Omri Miles. He serves as pastor of Grace Bible Church in New Orleans, Louisiana. He holds degrees from the Expositor Seminary and the Master's University, as well as certification with the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors. He spent more than 15 years in Tempe, Arizona, training for ministry until he was sent to plant a church in New Orleans East, where he now lives with his wife, Emily, and their five children. Omri, I'm so grateful that you're here with me this week and this month in particular, which is Mental Health Awareness Month, to talk about this very important issue of the history of therapeutic grounding. Thanks, brother, for being with me.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Now, some people may or may not know about the concept of grounding, particularly therapeutic grounding. We're going to dive in a little bit to the history, so you're going to give some background here. I'm just curious as to what piqued your interest in this particular topic. We certainly hear about the concept of grounding, therapeutic grounding. It's been a part of the discussion relative to biblical counseling in relation to clinically informed concepts. So I'm just curious what piqued your interest here.
So ironically enough, at the 2024 colloquium is really when I started looking into this, because the issue of grounding came up when we were in Kansas City. One of the presenters mentioned grounding, encouraged grounding, that it could be faithfully practiced. And as I heard and read the description of what grounding was, I happened to be preaching through Psalm 119 at the time. And the Lamed stanza, the 12th stanza in Psalm 119, that actually talks about creation, just seemed to address that very issue. And so in dialogue at the colloquium, that's when I brought this up. It initially came into my mind, and just since then haven't really been able to shake thinking about it. And as I've been reading more and more and hearing more, grounding just keeps surfacing. And so it compelled me to just look more and more into what's involved, what does it include, what qualifies as grounding. And so since, you know, over the past year and a half, I guess I've been thinking and studying more about this.
Yeah, that's so helpful to give a little bit of the background and the interest that's driven there. Talk a little bit about, as you've studied this, look back on some of the history, the origin of the practice. And listen, I want to preface this. I think it's important for our listeners to pay attention. When we're hearing about a technique, it's not an immediate dismissal. When we're hearing about a technique or something methodologically that's proposed to be utilized in counseling, it's important that we go back, we research, we find out where this idea came from, where these philosophies began, because we believe methods are not neutral. They are intertwined in the ideas that brought them about, right? The technique itself, for example, is trying to fix something or repair something. That all comes about based on a worldview. And this is something that, you know, Jay Adams, I think, did very well. I think David Pallison did this very well. I think for us, we're trying to do our best to do this well. And so talk a little bit about the origin of the practice. It is significant. It is important. So give us a little context there.
Yeah. So this came up when I was reading a journal article from a secular research journal on trauma. And the article was specifically on grounding and attributed the origin of grounding as a therapeutic practice to a man named Alexander Lowen. And so they kind of mentioned him in passing, but said that bioenergetics was the system, the counseling system from which grounding arose. And so as I looked into it, looked up a little bit online, it seemed that things kept coming back to Lowen. So I bought his bioenergetic book, read it, and biblical counselors, now that I'm reading more about the history, I don't think biblical counselors realize where this is all coming from. So Alexander Lowen was psychoanalyst, he was a psychotherapist, and he developed bioenergetics. So bioenergetics was his ideology or really worldview about how to help people overcome personality problems. He was a disciple of a man named Wilhelm Reich. And Reich was the founder of something else called Orgone Therapy. Now, without going into great detail, the reason this is important, the tie between these two men, is because at the foundation of their worldview, they believe that mental health or a healthy personality involved or had a lot to do with your sexuality. And so being able to perform sexually well was actually at the foundation of what was wrong or healthy with people. Now, Lowen came out of Wilhelm Reich, and he was discipled, or he was taught, and he was the client of this man named Wilhelm Reich. And so he resolved some of his own personality issues through his therapy, and then developed bioenergetics sort of as a branch off or a furtherance of this ideology. And really, bioenergetics, if I could just summarize what it's doing, just like the name implies, the energy of life or bio life, energetics, energy, he basically saw real energetic processes happening within the human body as producing man's mental life. And so he had this idea that the energy in your body is interacting constantly with the energy around you from other people, from inanimate creation. And so when people had something going wrong with them mentally, that was actually an indication that would show up in their body, either your stature, your facial expressions, or sicknesses in your body. And he sought to remedy these things through bodily therapies. And that is really the place, the setting, rather, for therapeutic grounding, because grounding was one of the bioenergetic techniques that sought to help people overcome trauma or different things that they came in for counseling to address.
It would be things like hysteria, for example. So when you're thinking about Freud and Reich specifically, that's exactly what they're rooted within, is the concept that when we have hysterical moments or things displayed in us, whether it be body language, facial expressions, as you mentioned, or fits of anxiety or depression or whatever, it's all explained by this deterioration or fixation at a certain level of sexuality. Now, notice the time frame that you're describing, I think, is really important, because when we get to discussion about time frame, this kind of thinking is not possible without a Darwinian closed system.
That's right.
That really focuses on naturalism and materialism, because now they're trying to explain the human person from a closed system. Okay. What I mean by closed system is that there's not something out there, a creator God, who's impacting us down here, and we're not morally responsible to him. This was a new way of describing the life inside, the psyche. The psyche had been redefined in lots of different ways, and Freud picked up on this within the framework of a Darwinian worldview. Reich is continuing much of that and even influenced Freud in many ways. Freud borrowed from so many people. And then now we're passing this down to describe, okay, how are we going to give life back to the individual? How are we going to repair the soul in some way? And we get to this concept, which is, by the way, a very mystical framing. And this framework is disconnected, you know, morally from the concept of God or guilt or shame or anything like that. It is rooted in the concept of sexuality being the primary basis of human nature. And you can start to see theological concepts replaced by this naturalistic, materialistic focus. So no wonder we come to a conclusion where we think some other methodology is fixing what's broken, because we're redefining what we think is broken in humanity. And I think this is a part of the thing that so many people miss when we're talking about methodology. Yes, theology and methodology are interconnected, because methodology is not neutral. It comes from the grounding of what we believe and how we think. You know, first and foremost, that worldview. Now, we've understood a little bit of where it's rooted. There's so much more to say about that. Yet, let's talk about some of the goals. So we can see its origin. They have specific goals when they talk about therapeutic grounding. And I want to be careful here. I want to let you run with the concept of goal, but I want our listeners to be thinking about this. We talk about several in the clinically informed world talk about redeeming or retrieving these types of concepts for a certain goal. Their goal is very defined. And by them, I just mean the therapeutic grounding, not the CIBC guys, but the therapeutic grounding is very defined and it fits within that worldview. And I want us to notice that that's distinct from what biblical counseling has described, right? Biblical counseling describes the aim, the goal is sanctification. And that's a really important distinction when we start talking about the concept of goal. What are we repairing? And this is where I think we're going to see a divergence, right, of, you know, biblical counseling versus the way the secular therapeutics approach this concept. And it can't just be overtly borrowed in this type of way or implemented. So talk a little bit about goal, and then maybe we can dissect that distinction.
Yeah, so Lowen says this on really the introductory page of bioenergetics, and grounding fits within this package, in this goal of bioenergetics is, quote, to help a person get back together with his body and to help him enjoy to the fullest degree possible the life of the body, end quote. So grounding fits in with that, because if he's right about the energetic processes in the body producing personality difficulties or abnormalities, then grounding, when you're trying to get over fear, some type of panic, or calm the body, then that is one way to achieve what bioenergetics is aiming at, where a person has to be at peace or unified with his body. And obviously the assumption there is that they're not at peace or unified in some way with their body, which is why they're experiencing the mental difficulties.
Now, as you describe this, Omri, it's very intriguing to me when we think about any counseling approach, any methodology that we employ. A counseling system has to have at least three things minimum. The first thing is they have to have an understanding of what they think is true or right or healthy about a person. The second thing is what makes a person broken? Like, what are the concepts? What are the problems that we are identifying? And then what are the solutions? How are we achieving those? This technique is intended to achieve the resetting of the inner man in such a way through this, you know, life, this practice that's intended to give life. Now, that's important for us because the therapeutic world sees value in this because of the worldview that they're approaching it with, that they're grasping at some sort of straw to reset the inner man, so to speak, to deal with the issues of life. Let's talk about in the therapeutic world how this concept of therapeutic grounding is currently being employed. And I think that'll help get us a little bit further down the road when we start thinking about the history of it in relation to where we are in the biblical counseling world right now.
The last time I taught on this several weeks ago, somebody, when I brought up grounding, they thought I was going to be teaching parents what not to do with their children. So a lot of people don't even realize therapeutic grounding or grounding really is a set of methods that seek to alter the body in some way, namely what's happening with the brain, and seeks to avoid some type of fear response, usually by accessing the senses. So it could be smells, touch, things that people see, things that they're hearing. And by getting people to fixate or emphasize or focus on one of these five senses, then it's supposed to essentially, like you said, reset in some way the body that avoids or takes them out of a fear response that they're currently experiencing. So people who've been diagnosed with PTSD are often using grounding techniques, or some anxiety disorder are using grounding techniques. And again, that's just through the senses, the counselor's guiding the person he's counseling to focus on these senses to stop the panic.
Now, what's interesting is part of what you're describing, I think is important for us to distinguish here. Perception becomes reality. And so the goal in this physical perspective is let's utilize the senses to see what we can detect around us to recapture reality so that we're not responding in a way that's inappropriate. And I think it's important that what their goal is they're trying to reset this inner man. They're trying to recalibrate the somatic responses that are happening. And so it's important that we distinguish the difference here. There is some level of where they're seeing the concept of perception that's reigning at that particular moment. They're trying to bring a person back to reality. You know, before we get into maybe my final question about how is it being utilized by some who call themselves biblical counselors, I think it would be important for us maybe to consider even a little bit here, how do we think about bringing a person back to reality? So biblically, it's not unusual that a person would be deceived, right, in their perception of a thing. You thought so-and-so said this, so you responded in a particular way, which may have been an appropriate response. If that's what they really said, they didn't really say that, then it's clarified that, oh, you said something that was really inappropriate and not helpful. And so now it resets you back to reality. When we're thinking biblically about something, the way the Bible describes is that the theological truth is the North Star, right? The promises of God really is the North Star. It's the thing that recalibrates our heart. It's the thing that Paul says when we renew our mind, that it recalibrates us. It grounds us into reality, so to speak. And what we're describing in this secular therapeutic approach is they're trying to accomplish that same thing by another means. And that's not the means provided by Scripture. I think that's an important point for us to emphasize here as to what's at stake, right? And maybe in a future podcast, we'll talk a little bit about this. But I want to get to the final question, let you kind of finish this expression of history and why we should care about the history. And the final question I want to ask is, how are biblical counselors trying to leverage this concept of therapeutic grounding with embodied practices?
And just a number of biblical counselors, not all who encourage grounding or say it's a legitimate practice that can be utilized in biblical counseling, actually use it themselves. But this is being encouraged that in biblical counseling, counselees are taught to fixate on some element, could be even in the room, the fibers on the carpet, the firmness of the table that are being used in counseling, and those things are supposed to bring some sort of stability to people being counseled. Now, there are variations of this. I think the very best attempts at this actually seek to leverage whatever is created to remind people about what's theologically true. You know, God is like a rock in some way. Let's talk about this rock that you're holding, how it reminds you about God, what's true. And so in those instances, though, I would argue that you're not actually practicing grounding. Perhaps it's up for debate. I think it would be a worthwhile discussion to describe, is that actual grounding or are you doing something biblical? And I think the crux of what I would want people listening to hear me say is the roots from which grounding come are not biblical. They're hostile to what we believe as Christians. Therefore, they cannot be wed to biblical counseling. And so either what's being called grounding by biblical counselors is not actual grounding and you're doing something biblical. And so we can ditch the clinical language and just call it what Scripture calls it, or you are practicing something that's clinical, that's secular, that comes from atheistic presuppositions, and you're not actually practicing biblical counseling. But it can't be both ways. There was something about that during your last comment was important to mention about what Alexander Lowen believed. He sought these somatic interventions. He utilized those because he did not believe that there was an immaterial self. He didn't believe there was a soul, a spirit, a heart. And even in this book, he describes how those things are assumed by many people, but he basically dismisses them as outdated, antiquated way of thinking. And so you speak about this closed system, his somatic interventions, grounding included, make perfect sense if he's right that there is no soul. Obviously, though, since there is a soul, then he misdiagnosed and offered an illegitimate cure, one which Scripture has superior answers to.
I think what you just said is one of the most critical points is if we give him his premise, right, the worldview, that the backdrop that created the methodology, honestly, like, it makes sense. I remember sitting in my college psych classes. I did a major in psychology. And I remember thinking biblically that if you give them their premise, then what they say is the answer actually makes sense. And that's the difference, is we can't biblically give them their premise to say that there is no God, there's no soul. He's following Freud and Darwinian thinking, and he's being consistent with that. And so we have to be cautious and careful not to just simply employ thinking, oh, we can redeem something like this. It's aiming to fix something radically different. And we're running a little long. So what I want to do is I want to bring you back, and I want us to have a discussion. We've talked about the history. We've talked about where it's come from. And then what I want to do is to talk about, is grounding actually biblical? Because you got into that at the end here. But I think it's something we can talk about. So maybe we'll bring you back and let's have a conversation about that as well. You're listening to Truth and Love, a podcast of ACBC. I want to remind you, in our discussion today about the history of grounding, I'm reminded of our fundamentals training. And we have 94 training centers around the United States and even around the world. And as a part of that fundamentals training, if this was intriguing discussion to you today, a part of that fundamentals training is we work through the landscape of counseling. We talk about the secular, we talk about integration, and we talk about biblical counseling, and we help to distinguish the differences between those approaches of counseling. And this is just one area where we would teach you to discern and to think about, what are the ideas that are the backdrop that are leading to methodologies? And that's important. And you can receive that training at any of our training centers around the United States, around the world. And this leads to certification. So I want to encourage you, if this was an intriguing topic, you can go to our website, biblicalcounseling.com. You can find out more about our fundamentals training, where you'll learn to discern the landscape of counseling, the difference between secular, integrated, and therapeutic. So if that interests you, I encourage you, go to our website. You can find out about our trainings, biblicalcounseling.com.